Hey guys, Press Gallery host Emma Graney here with another quick reminder to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, wherever it is that you like to podcast. We do love it if you leave us a rating. We love 5 stars, gold ones. Do tell your friends about us. It does help to spread the word about our weekly politics podcast. We have our very special series running right now about how the United Conservative Party formed and ended up winning power. Now, let's just take a second to try and understand who Jason Kenney is. He is a politician. When you think Jason Kenney, you think politics. Most of his career, in fact, his entire actual career has been in public life. He's always campaigning. He's always about politics. He doesn't seem to have much of a social life, to be honest with you. The guy spent years driving around Alberta in a blue pickup truck. I mean, sure, you can ask him what his favourite road trip food is. Let's take a listen to his response there.
Okay, so I have some fun road trip questions for you.
Uh-oh.
Considering you're on a big long road trip.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so first up, what is your favourite road trip snack?
I'm going to go with Tabor corn.
Tabor corn? What, do you just buy
that? This is stupid, but I didn't know you can just eat it fresh off the cob. We're down there in southern Alberta, and you don't need to boil it or anything. It's just sweet, lovely, fresh, healthy corn.
Tabor corn? I mean, sure, Tabor corn's delicious. I love to stop on a road trip and get myself some Tabor corn in the middle of summer. Of course, it's in southern Alberta. Tabor corn is well known as some of the juiciest, yummiest corn you can get. But that as a road trip snack? That's gotta be political calculation. Chapter 2 of that will be coming out next week. As always, any questions, comments or concerns, give me a shout. You can email me, egraney@postmedia.com, or shoot me something on Twitter @EmmaLGraney. I like kitten gifts. Big fan of those. Enjoy this week's episode. Hello and welcome to the Press Gallery, the Edmonton Journal's politics podcast. It is Friday, May 24th, 2019, and this is the Game of Thrones speech edition. A little bit of a pop culture reference there, guys.
Trying to up our SEO, are we?
Yes.
Get that some stands Google for hits.
Search engine optimization.
I'm just trying to jump on the Game of Thrones bandwagon here, okay? I think that's pretty clear that's what I'm doing. I am your host, Provincial Affairs reporter Emma Graney. With me today around the table, my fellow legislative reporter right now, Janet French. How are you?
No, I'm Claire Clancy.
Paul Clancy has injured her wrist. We love you, Clancy. We miss you. So Janet has taken up the mantle
Get
of being down at the ledge.
Get your ass back here, Clancy.
What? You love every second of it down there. What are you talking about?
Oh, yes, mm-hmm. I do. Yeah.
Legislative columnist Keith Gerine, how are you, mate?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Excellent. And our boss, Dave Breckenridge, who is wearing a tie today. It's very off-brand for you.
That's true. Yeah. I like to mix things up, surprise people, I don't know.
Well, you look very sharp. Congratulations.
It ties the look together.
I love what you did there. That was very good. Wow, we're on fire with some really great puns here already today. Excellent. So we are, of course, going to be talking about the throne speech. One of the most exciting days for a political reporter is throne speech day. Second only
really?
To budget. Second only the election. Okay, look, it's just as a nerd, it's kind of fun. So we're going to talk about that, what was in there, kind of the vibe and what we might see to come. We're going to talk about the first few days of the new legislature and about some new rules that are coming, some standing orders that might change the way that the legislature works. Let's get straight on into it. Throne speech was on Wednesday. Keith, you read this.
I did.
We all read this. Wasn't it fun? What was your take on it?
It was 7 pages of frivolity, brilliance,
Is that sarcastic?
A little bit. I tend to roll my eyes a bit at Throne Speech Day. I find it's
They have cannons.
There's music there's up in the
sandwiches.
Galleries. There's pomp and ceremony. The lieutenant governor is there. It's a nice tradition, but the speech itself tends to be a little on the dull side. Fortunately, and I will give Jason Kenney credit for this, this particular throne speech was about half the length of a regular throne speech.
True.
Yeah, only about 7 pages. Most of them are 13, 14, 15 pages. Tend to go on an hour or more. This one was obviously considerably less. And it pretty much just gets straight to the point. It kind of lays out the government's agenda, unveils some of the bills that that the government is going to introduce in the House, and looks forward to the agenda through the fall, and even hints at what may come in 2020. It very much stuck to the UCP campaign platform. And that was kind of all that was in there. There was a bit of flowery language towards the end. It talked about an inevitable destiny of Alberta, which is
your destiny.
Yeah, which is very...
See, that's like Game of Thrones.
It's very Game of Thrones, exactly. So I rolled my eyes a little bit at that kind of language. It seemed a little presumptuous to me. However, in terms of length, in terms of getting to the point, I thought it was an effective speech.
Interestingly, they did not acknowledge the treaty land that they're on either, which has been the kind of theme over the last few years, hasn't it?
It has, right? And that's become an issue, right? The NDP government started every press conference, every government event by acknowledging that they were on Treaty 6 territory, Treaty 7 territory, wherever they happen to be in the province, and also recognized the Métis people. The UCP government has done away with that little tradition. Not entirely sure why, but...
It wasn't mentioned in the speech at all?
No.
I find surprising. It's, you know, I guess it's kind of surprising that they're doing away with it in press conferences, but at the very least, you know, the vice regal and treaties and all of that.
Yeah.
And it seems like it would make sense to go in the throne speech.
It talked a lot about the crown and the queen and that kind of thing. But of course, Jason Kenney's a hardcore monarchist.
Stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Now, Janet, you covered this. This was your first throne speech that you were covering, I think, wasn't it?
Live. I mean, I've heard and watched lots of throne speeches in multiple provinces, but the first time I've actually been to one.
So obviously, you know, we knew that the first couple of bills were coming, but we're looking forward to the fall here. So what were some of the things that stood out to you in terms of what we're going to see coming down the pipeline?
I'm going to interrupt your question. I'm going to do a political thing and answer a different question you didn't ask.
You're learning really quickly down at the ledge.
I'm figuring this out. So we actually just heard from Jason Nixon, by the way, that the session is going to go on into the summer until the UCP gets all its things done that it has promised it will do before the summer. So if they have to come back after the Calgary Stampede, we're going to come back after the Calgary Stampede. So get ready for a summer of politicking, it sounds like. So some of the bills, obviously the first three bills, Jason Kenney had made no surprise of. The first one would be the repealing the carbon tax, the act to repeal the carbon tax, I think. I can't remember the exact wording of what it's called.
Yes.
That has been introduced. And the second bill is labor reforms, which the UCP is painting as giving more rights to workers. And the NDP actually says takes workers' rights to collectively bargain away or not. Collectively organize away. And the third bill, remind me.
That will be the third bill will be about corporate tax cuts.
Corporate tax cuts, right? We're going 12% down to 11 each year progressively till 2022. Do we hit 8%? Then we did hear about a few more bills coming. And I can't remember exactly which ones they're pushing through in the summer and which ones they're going to get to in the fall. But there's also Claire's Law, which is supposed to give people who are suspected victims of domestic violence access potentially to the criminal records of their partners, their intimate partners. And also the Save the Girl Next Door Act,
correct,
which is
intervening
in human trafficking. We all raised some eyebrows over that name, but apparently there was a bill that passed in Wynne's Ontario legislature by the same name that had similar effect. So that
I
would
hate
allow
that name.
He's
I
taking
just
policy
hate
names
it
from Kathleen Wynne.
Yeah.
Yes.
Jason Kenney, a liberal.
Yep.
Well, wasn't he a liberal, like, back in the day?
He did work for Ralph Goodale. Yes, his first foray into politics, you're correct, was working for Ralph Goodale, well-known liberal. Yes. That definitely happened.
There's also a Red Tape Reduction Act coming. That's going to be
Bill
4.
That's Bill 4, is Red Tape Reduction.
And some interesting changes to the education legislation as well, right? And Janet would know that one pretty well. Surprised
like,
you forgot
oh God,
about
that.
Forgot
one. About
oh yeah, that.
That
thing I usually write about. So we actually don't. It was really unclear in the throne speech exactly what amendments he wants to make the Education Act. So just to rewind to what the heck we're talking about. Right now, the overarching piece of legislation that governs schooling, K-12 schooling in Alberta, is called the School Act. Major platform promise of the UCP was to replace that with the Education Act, which is a piece of legislation that was passed by the legislature by the PCs in 2012, amended in 2015. They wrote some regulations, then they got turfed from office before they ever proclaimed it. So this is actually introducing several potential major changes to the education system, including, hey, you can go to school for free till you're 21, which has substantial implications, particularly for urban school boards, shoehorning potentially Calgary Board of Education says it's going to have it could have 1,700 extra kids between the ages of 19 and 21.
Yeah.
And also,
don't they want those kids to graduate?
They do. They do. Yeah. But right now,
but
you have
to pay. They need money to help that.
Yeah. And there's something about the age of everybody starting kindergarten at the same time, and also it would potentially eliminate the cap on charter schools. There's lots of little changes in there. However, we don't exactly know. He wants to amend it before he brings it in, but we don't know how they plan to amend it, and it's a question I haven't been able to get an answer to.
And also some changes about it's going to be about curriculum and also make it clear on the way that you have to teach.
Yeah, and
which
that's
is
not in legislation. There was a line about that that I couldn't quite decode about something to do with the legislation talking about curriculum. And right now, right now the legislation in Alberta does not tell teachers how to teach subjects or to put any timeline on curriculum review. That's there is a ministerial order, which Jason Kenney has said he would repeal, which touches on inquiry-based learning and how we should be teaching children using like projects and helping foster their areas of interest and learning through asking questions rather than sort of rote worksheet, repetitive, you know, algorithm learning.
Yeah, I don't know that you can legislate how a teacher runs their classroom. You know, I mean, I guess you could, but I mean, that's very bizarrely government overreach into a classroom, I would say. Having a mum who was a teacher, she would not have reacted particularly well if, you know, the government would just say, you don't know best for your classroom, I'm sorry. You must do what we think is best for your classroom, particularly when you're coming from policy made by a whole bunch of non-teachers.
Well, that sort of actually does exist now with the ministerial order, but that ministerial order is from the PCs.
Right.
It's not David Eggen's ministerial order. It's not from the NDP. It was from the PCs from 2013.
Also, they want to get this in place for the start of the next school year. So really good luck there, because Janet and I are both an education reporters. You're still our education reporter. Trying to get an answer on anything in the summer is impossible.
There are going to be a lot of superintendents and assistant superintendents working a lot of hours this summer at a time that they would normally be on vacation. And I think that this is really going to throw school boards for a loop.
I think so too. Dave?
Yeah. Okay. No, you know, I think that as far as the changes to the Education Act, it would be nice to have some idea as to what exactly they're going to do within the next couple of weeks. It'd be nice to have, because the public will start tuning out once summer comes around. Parents of kids will not be paying attention to what's going on with school legislation once their kids are done for the summer and they are getting the heck out of Dodge. Janet will be on the file for you. But so, as Keith, as you mentioned in your column, and it's recently, and it was about climate change, it wasn't about the Education Act, but you were clear to point out that the UCP, when it comes to dealing with things that were their priorities in the election, they're getting down to business. They're, you know, we're going to repeal the carbon. We're going to get these things done right away. Repeal the carbon tax, make Alberta open for business, and whatever Bill 3 was, I can't remember.
That's the corporate tax.
That's right. The corporate taxes. I don't know. Bill numbers and names and all that. They should all have catchy names like the Saving the Girl Next Door Act.
Oh,
like
no.
The Reducing Red Tape Act should be the Wielding the Machete Act. I don't know.
Dramatic act names.
The dramatic act names. So they've shown that they can release details and really get to it on issues that are important to them. I think that on issues that are important to a lot of Albertans, namely how the school system is going to run, it'd be good to hear from them on this sooner rather than later.
So the question I think is, have they thought through the implications of replacing the fundamental piece of legislation governing K-12 schools? Because
that's all Jason Kenney does, isn't it?
A cynic would say that the impetus for that was to backtrack on the GSA rules, right? Which is which is their, some people are calling it a backdoor way of rolling back the protections for LGBTQ kids in schools, right? It lets private schools off the hook. They don't have to have policies. They wouldn't have to have policies anymore or codes of conduct, you know, spelling out the consequences for picking on gay kids. And they would not be required to make particular accommodations other than just to say like, oh yeah, there's the Human Rights Act. You should probably follow that.
Well, there's an easy way to show that it wasn't a backdoor is that to amend the Education Act to include those protections.
What a novel concept, Dave. Well, I mean, to be clear, the UCP and Jason Kenney has said numerous times, we don't favor outing gay kids. I mean, they've said that again and again.
Mandatory. They said they don't favor mandatory outing of gay kids. Nobody has suggested that that is the plan or the or a request.
So also during the first, during this week, we had a new speaker elected, Nathan Cooper, the MLA from Old Didsbury Three Hills.
That's
two
right.
Hills. You got How many hills are in
no,
his writing?
Hills, three hills.
So Nathan Cooper is, of course, huge process political nerd. He would definitely not argue with me if I were to call him that. He calls himself that. He was pretty excited about being elected speaker.
So was his grandma.
Yes. So Janet, you saw that, right? What was happening in the chamber? That was pretty cute.
Yeah, so lots of people, you know, lots of proud parents and kids and whatever people, they come willingly and they get dragged to come watch their loved ones and friends from the gallery, like be sworn in as MLAs. And lots of people were there on Tuesday watching their loved ones be sworn in as UCP MLAs. And then there in the afternoon for the election of speaker, slightly smaller crowd, but there was a cluster of what I can only assume is Cooperites.
A cluster of Cooperites. I love it.
Yes. And so there was a old elderly lady who was quite red in the face, stabbing away at her tears on her face. And then Nathan Cooper pointed up and said that that was his grandmother and that he really admired her and that she was a real role model for him. And it was her that he wanted to emulate in his role, serving as speaker.
The interesting thing I found about Nathan Cooper being selected, and by the way, he beat out Heather Sweet from the NDP, who had served as, I think, deputy chair of committees during the NDP government. But Cooper won that, we think, fairly overwhelmingly. We don't know because it was a secret ballot among the MLAs. But he is the youngest speaker Alberta's had since 1936, which is, he's only 39 years old. The recent trend has been of speakers with a lot more experience in their 50s and 60s. Jean Zawadzki, Ken Kowalski, Bob Warner, the most recent one, all in their 50s and 60s. Back when Alberta was a younger province and people only lived to age 55 or 60, we did have speakers who were in their 30s. But he is the youngest since the Great Depression. I think that'll make for an interesting speaker. He will perhaps have some more contemporary references. He will perhaps add a little more fun and levity and humor to the role. We'll see. But he did seem pretty happy to have the role.
Yeah.
I mean, he is into it.
He's really into it. He was so excited when he came by and I was chatting with him one day just about before he was elected as speaker, just like, oh, so you're going to be running for speaker, yeah? And he's like, yes. He was so excited about it because he's one of those guys who does genuinely love the nerdy procedural part of politics. Like, he loves it.
Andrew Scheer was the same way. Right. He was.
That's right.
I'm still getting used to the idea of a younger speaker, even though Andrew Scheer was speaker for quite a few years.
And he was in his 30s.
He was in his 30s as well. You know, for me, I kind of miss Ken Kowalski's I've had enough attitude, like just kind of like, ugh.
I'm sick of this crap.
And Peter Milliken at the federal level. I'm a bit of a nerd and I like watching Question Period and I like watching how the speaker deals with issues and that big booming voice and stuff like that. Cranky old men.
Get this man a tricorn.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and Nathan Cooper says he's going to use his best dad voice to keep all of the politicians in line because he is, of course, a dad of three and did draw a parallel between politicians and children. So, of course, we had Bill 1 was tabled as well already this week. Keith, what was that one all about?
Yeah, that one's the Carbon Tax Repeal Act. It's not a surprise. Jason Kenney and the UCP have been railing against this for 2 or 3 years and have essentially made it their top priority. Interesting timing, though. They introduced it in the House at the time that Alberta is essentially on fire. There's huge wildfires up in northern Alberta right now. And this is the time that they choose to begin dismantling a lot of the NDP's climate change initiatives. Now, I draw a connection here loosely, right? The fires that are going on in northern Alberta right now, we don't know the direct cause of those, right? It's impossible to determine if climate change is a direct contributor to those particular fires. But what we do know is that climate change in general, warming climate, creates the possibility of the probability of more frequent and more severe extreme weather and natural disasters, including wildfires. So it was an interesting kind of dichotomy there to kind of reverse the climate change initiatives of the previous government at the same time that we are seeing evidence potentially of climate disaster occurring right here in Alberta. And the concerning part for me was it's not just the carbon tax that's going. That's fine if people don't agree with the carbon tax. 55% of Albertans voted against it in the recent election. But the UCP has no urgency to replace it with anything else. And that's the problem. We heard that they're quite urgent about other things, education reform, red tape reduction. They're willing to stay past the stampede to get their legislation through. But that urgency does not extend to climate change. Their program, which is going to focus on heavy emitters, isn't going to be released until later this year, possibly 2020. That's disappointing to me that they're not showing the same kind of determination on that file that they are towards the economy.
And the environment minister was asked, do you think that this is a crisis? Are you in crisis mode? Jason Nixon was asked this and he went, crisis mode? Nah.
Oh, and interestingly, was it Kenny was also every time he mentioned what the steps Alberta was going to take about climate change and how, you know, the carbon tax or carbon price will still apply to heavy emitters. He always followed up by saying, like, basically, we could shut, and this is almost a quote, we could shut Alberta's economy down tomorrow and it essentially wouldn't make a dent in the global emissions.
Yeah, I mean, that is a common point that the UCP and others bring up, that it is not essentially Alberta's responsibility. We have little to do with this, which
Well, it's 40% of Canada's emissions come from Alberta.
Well, I agree. I think it's a wrong-headed argument. But even if our emissions total is small compared to the global totals, we still have to do our part. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can't have every small jurisdiction in the world saying, it's not our problem. It's somebody in China that has to deal with this. It doesn't work.
We want to export all that oil to China anyway.
Sure, but like China and India, which have two massive emitters, they are turning towards solar power and renewable energy. Like, that's what they're doing
China is still building coal-fired plants.
They're also building more solar, and so is India. And so to argue that we don't have to do anything because it's a global problem, everyone else has to do something first, it's kind of nutty because, you know what, these developing economies, are, as well as China, they are doing stuff already. So to say that, it's just kind of baloney.
It's one thing to say that we don't like the NDP's climate plan, we don't like the climate leadership plan and giving all these grants from the carbon tax to community. Like, it's one thing to say that and say we're going to do something else. And it's another thing to turn around and say, well, we'll get it out when we get it out. That's problematic. Either, like, if you're serious about it, and Kenny has said his government is going to have a comprehensive climate plan, let's get to work on it. Let's not just end it and then not do anything for months, right? Like, that's a problem. And it's the same problem that Andrew Scheer is going to have. He, at the federal level, he claims that he's going to have a detailed climate plan come out in June. Well, let's see it before the election. And let's have details on what you plan to do with it. It's a problem for conservative parties right now, even though Kenny won with the majority saying that he's going to get rid of the carbon tax and get rid of the climate leadership plan. I think he still owes Albertans movement on that file.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, his argument that he tried to use the other day as well was, well, the NDP didn't introduce their climate plan for months after coming into office. So it was this implication of, I don't understand why you're so mad about it. But let's also not forget, further to Keith's point, that they have so many issues that they are moving on straight away. Jason Kenney said going into the campaign, he's like, yeah, we've already started drafting policy. They already had teams in place drafting legislation. So I don't think it's a fair argument to say, well, the NDP didn't do theirs for ages either. Well, yeah, but you've come into government with legislation already written about what you want to change and how you want to change it, and a giant document full of campaign promises. So it's disingenuous to argue that you haven't had time or we just haven't had a chance to even think about this yet, because you want to completely change the education system before the 1st of September.
I think we also can't forget the political implications of changing climate policy in Alberta too, right? I mean, we talked, this word social license was thrown around for years, right? About how NDP opposition leader, when she was premier, Rachel Notley, was constantly saying like, hey, we you know, got the approval for this Trans Mountain pipeline because we have the social license to do it, because we have strong climate policies and good good energy ambitions for Alberta, and we're going to develop this industry responsibly and move to like 30% renewables by 2030. All those targets are now out the door. What are the implications then for our ability to secure social license to have national energy projects approved?
Yeah, and as much as that term really does suck and should just be thrown out, Justin Trudeau, in fairness, did say, yeah, you know, part of this was because of Alberta's climate goals.
But then he's already, but now the horse is out of that barn anyway for Trudeau, because he's repeatedly said the pipeline is in the national interest, and the feds bought the pipeline. So,
yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, what are the political implications? Will it get approval? If it doesn't, it looks like the government ragged the puck and wasted money on a pipeline.
Yeah, why'd they buy a pipeline?
Yeah.
But I think the question is for other projects, right? For future projects. This isn't going to be the only pipeline expansion that Alberta ever considers, is it?
Well, if the feds pass Bill C-48 and bans tanker traffic on the Northwest Coast, this is really the only pipeline Alberta's ever going to get.
Speaking of which, the legislature on its first full sitting day did come together for an emergency debate this week to talk about Bill C-48 and 69. And then all the major parties signed a joint letter. I believe it was the NDP, the UCP, the Alberta Liberals, and the Alberta Party all signed their name to a letter.
Can we call the Alberta Liberals a major party when they got 1% of the vote?
Hey, man, that's what Jason Kenney called them.
They were in the leaders' debate.
Yep, they're in the leaders' debate. Anyway, they signed this joint letter to send Ottawa saying, you know what, we're okay with 69 as long as you make all the amendments that the Senate has
187 of them.
Yes, there are so many of them. Anyway, that was just a fun little aside. And there was a nice little Government House tea, I assume, with small sandwiches.
Yeah, there was
with the senators, Jason Kenney, and NDP leader Rachel Notley as well.
Yeah, there were some. Yeah, so the five of the six Alberta senators were in town yesterday, and they did meet with some provincial leaders at Government House to talk about C-48 and C-69. Which, if you have not been paying attention, fair enough, is something to do with like a restriction on tanker traffic off the BC coast.
Go back to our previous podcast episode. Yeah. We go into
listen. Go listen to them.
Yeah.
I
did want to switch gears just briefly now to Janet. You were just at a press conference as we recall this on Friday morning.
Order!
None of that desk thumping.
Why are we hitting?
That, friends, is something you will not hear if the standing orders change as the UCP wants them to.
Carson's going to hate that when he edits the audio.
Sorry,
he's
listeners.
He's going to be like,
Yeah, he is going to hate that. That's our podcast producer. Sorry, Carson. Janet, what happened in the press conference this morning with House Leader
because,
Jason Nixon?
So Government House Leader Jason Nixon announced this morning, he didn't run through quite all of them, but there's about a dozen procedural types of changes coming to the rules that rule the House and the legislature. And so the first of them is that the UCP is trying to, as they say, bring more decorum to their meetings and to question period. And so one of the ways that members express lots of different feelings, disdain, sometimes even like the example that Heather Sweet gave today, she's the deputy House leader for the opposition, NDP, she said that sometimes they bang on the desks even if somebody's trying to give an emotional speech.
Absolutely. That happens a lot.
Brian Jean's wildfire address, like he kind of got choked up and couldn't continue and everybody like banged on their desks.
Because it gives them a chance to gather themselves.
Right.
And the same thing happened with Rick Fraser, who ended up with the Alberta Party, but was with the PC, when he gave a really emotional speech about his son who is gay and how his thinking has come around on GSAs and LGBTQ issues.
Right.
It is,
and she's saying it fills the silence to allow them to give them a second to gather their thoughts. So it's not just this wall of silence they have to fill with their difficult to express thoughts. Anyway, so obviously she is opposed to that particular change. The desk thumping is getting a lot of attention. So Jason Nixon says it's embarrassing. School groups come to watch question period in the legislature, and then they come to him after and go like, ugh, that was just, why are these MLAs so badly behaved? Goodness, they just why are they all these outbursts and banging? And Nixon also says, like, it's different when you're on the floor. He said it's incredibly loud. It's actually hard to, if people are thumping and banging, you can't even hear yourself talk. It's just very disruptive. He finds it just to be not that productive in terms of getting business done. So there's a little bit to do about that. But some of the other changes are also to do with getting business done. And this is, if you're not a political nerd, well, you're a political nerd because you're listening to this podcast, so keep listening, they want to change introductions. So if you ever watch Session, they'll have often at the beginning, MLAs will stand up and say, hey, it's the grade two class is here from, you know,
Alberta Central Smith, Primary School.
Smith
or whatever.
School or whatever. Yeah. Welcome them here today. Yay. Welcome.
To you and through you. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to welcome to you and through you to this the members of this assembly, the grade two class from.
Yeah.
You guys pay like way more attention
because you have to talk through the speaker in the house. Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, so they introduce people.
So they want to make those.
They want to make it so that. But Jason said that. Sorry, Mr. Nixon, Minister Nixon. Oh my gosh, can we talk about how we're forgetting to use their proper names all the time?
It's hard to switch Super from hard. 4 years of one thing to like another thing straight away. Totally. Jason Kenney called Rachel Notley premier
Jason Nixon called Rachel Notley premier twice today.
It's not just us finding this change difficult.
Our brains are not adapting well. Anyhow, so Nixon said that those have become more partisan, that people have sometimes just naturally ebbed and flowed in their introductions, even if it seems fairly benign. It's like, and the nursing union is here because you're taking away all their rights. Like, that was totally a hypothetical example. They're actually going to have introductions in the House go through the speaker now so that they will be more nonpartisan. And also members can do it in their member statements if they so please or have that availability that day. And another thing they're going to do is add the ability for people to abstain on votes.
This is massive. And the background on this, of course, as you might remember if you pay any attention to Alberta politics, is Bill 9 that was introduced by the NDP, which was going to establish protest-free bubble zones around abortion clinics in Alberta. Now, the UCP came under a ton of fire on this because they refused to debate it, they refused to vote on it, and they would get up and leave the House whenever a vote was going to happen on the bill or on any of the amendments or proposed amendments to the bill.
And Jason Nixon said, well, we had to leave the House because we didn't have the ability to abstain. So that was our only option.
Which I might point out that at the time, none of them would acknowledge the fact that abstaining from a vote is a thing you can do in Alberta. When we brought this up, they said, we chose to abstain. Like, that's not a thing you can do. Yes, it is. It's part of political tradition here. It's totally a thing you can do. And we all said, no, it's actually not a thing that exists in Alberta. So it's interesting that they're trying to use this argument. It's interesting they're bringing it in because it flies in the face of every answer they gave at the time with the Bill 9 debate. That's interesting they're bringing that in.
Well, you know, at the federal level, at the House of Commons, they can abstain by remaining seated, right? Like, yeah, like...
I think so, yeah, something like that.
rcommons.ca, requirement to vote. There's no rule requiring a member to vote. A member may abstain from voting simply by remaining seated during the vote. Such abstentions are an unofficial status and not recorded, although on occasion members have risen following a vote to offer an explanation for why they have abstained. So if it brings Alberta in line with, say, federal parliament, fine, but given that it comes in the wake of this rather controversial way that they abstained from something that they should have voted on. I'm sorry. Like, Derek Fildebrandt, to his credit, he debated the bill, offered amendments to the bubble zone bill, and still voted against it and had his name on record as to why he was against it. And good on him for doing that. The UCP didn't, and I don't think they handled that matter well at all. As for the desk thumping, I'm of two minds on it. I think that, yes, there are moments where the desk thumping gets out of hand, where, you know, the government is like on a roll and everyone is standing up to cheer people, or they answer a question really snidely with like a great like verbal jab at the end of their answer and everyone pounds their desk and applauds. I think that kind of gets out of hand. I don't mind the idea that it occasionally, it makes sense. And after speeches or whatever, it makes sense to do. On the flip side, I almost think the cynic in me is like, they just want to make the question period or the goings on at the legislature as boring as possible so few people watch.
Oh, I'll still be watching.
Well, I know you. Emma will, and we'll be tweeting puffball gifs whenever the...
you know I will.
Anything about puffballs?
Oh,
anything?
Yeah. So we had heard that there might
puffball be... Puffball questions, by the way, are questions from backbenchers on the government side who ask questions of ministers, not necessarily in an unimportant topic. However, the minister knows that it is coming, it is organized, and it is all scripted. That is a definition of puffball.
I would extend that to questions that don't necessarily have anything to do with a specific issue in that member's riding and is just a way to get the minister to trumpet what the government is doing on an issue.
Exactly. How awesome are you, minister?
Well, yeah,
let me
exactly.
tell you about how awesome I am. And with that, there are, of course, more changes coming, and you should read Janet's story for all of it. But we have to get going on to the next segment here. Our usual segment, Good Stuff from the Gallery, in which we recommend things we have seen, read, listened to lately that we think you might also enjoy, dear listeners. Dave?
I'm going to recommend a podcast this week. I read a good piece by local writer Omar Mualim. He wrote a piece for The Ringer about a silent film star from Lebanon who's actually a relative of his. It's a very good read. You should listen. My recommendation this week, though, is a bizarre podcast from Wondery and Bloomberg called The Shrink Next Door. And the setup is basically this columnist, former New York Times columnist, works for Bloomberg now, lives at has a place in the Hamptons, and there's this shrink and his wife who lived in the house next door, and there was this doting handyman who did all sorts of jobs at this house. One day the psychiatrist and his wife are gone, the handyman is there, and the columnist learns that the handyman is actually the owner of the house and was a patient of the shrink and the, sorry, I keep using the word shrink because it's in the title. I know it's a pejorative, bear with me, that he was actually a patient of the psychiatrist and alleges that the psychiatrist basically took over his whole life over 30 years, like had him disassociate himself with from his family and his friends and his coworkers and signed like power of attorney or had a new will where it's bizarre. I'm three episodes in. It's a fascinating, fascinating listen. And if you're looking for some music to listen to this summer, you should check out the new album from the Vampire Weekend, Father of the Bride. It's an excellent, nice, summery.
Keith, what do you have for us this week, mate?
I have a profile in the Narwhal magazine called Meet Alberta's Most Vilified Environmentalist.
Yeah! Great piece.
This is a great piece. It's a profile of Ed Whittingham, who you will know became a bit of a whipping boy for Jason Kenney during the recent campaign. He was formerly the executive director of the Pembina Institute, had been appointed to the board of the Alberta Energy Regulator, and this had not sat well with Jason Kenney. I felt it was very, very unfair of Kenney, the way that he treated Whittingham, made him a pariah during the campaign and mischaracterized him. This is a great profile for Albertans to meet the real Ed Whittingham. The photo of him is actually posing in a hunting vest of some sort with a rifle. not your typical environmentalist.
Birda.
So I recommend it.
Nice. I'm going to recommend a piece actually that I read that was tweeted at me, which is a fan. I've forgotten who it is. I'm so sorry, people. It's a really interesting read on Mosaic. It's called Iceland Knows How to Stop Teen Substance Abuse, but the Rest of the World Isn't Listening. And it's a super, super interesting read about basically, as the title might suggest, how Iceland has managed to kind of stop or greatly reduce the scourge of teens drinking and smoking. And they've done it through basically just giving kids something to do. What a novel concept. But yeah, it's really cool. And it goes into a lot of depth about what Iceland did, how they did it, and how it might work in the rest of the world and why other places are not embracing this very real social experiment that has been going on now for a couple of decades and is working really well. Janet, take us home.
Okay, well, I also have a podcast because I'm Claire Clancy, but also as education-y because I'm also Janet French. So they're one of my favorite podcasts is called The Hidden Brain, and they had an episode from last week called What's Not on the Test. And it just really raises these philosophical questions about like, what is an education and what is a high quality functional education and what skills do you actually need in education? What really helps you succeed in life? And is it how well you write all these tests or is it skills that you cannot possibly test? So to look at this, they talked to a Nobel Prize winning economist, James Heckman, about his work, and he's done a lot of investigation into what sorts of skills, some of them are soft skills, so skills that you can't necessarily write down on a piece of paper and a little bubble sheet, prepare people for life, and found that it's not necessarily, surprisingly, not how well you fill out those little bubble sheets, but things like grit and perseverance and the qualities that some people would argue are not necessarily being taught in schools the way that they maybe were or could be or should be.
Interesting. Guys, thank you so much for joining me, Janet French, Keith Duran, and Dave Breckenridge for another episode of The Press Gallery. Do subscribe. You'll get all the latest episodes straight to your device. Any questions, comments, or concerns, shoot me an email, egraney@postmedia.com, or contact me on Twitter @EmmaLGraney. Have a good one.